Yeah. Is this the crew that had nothing better to do on Memorial Day weekend than paw, I don't know.
What do you mean
miserably rainy Sunday?
I cleared my schedule for this.
Exactly.
This is a priority, man. Come on.
Yeah, true, what is true. Better? What is
yeah,
better,
that
Chris?
Is true. What is better? Plus this weekend was terrible in terms of weather. Right. John, what's it like in California?
The weather's amazing.
yeah.
Of course.
So did you see Kamala Harris got in trouble because she called it the long weekend instead of Memorial Day and they said she was disrespecting their troops? This is so stupid. This is how stupid.
But it is a long weekend.
Yeah, technically it is. But then it's like that stupid Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays kind of bullshit.
Oh, my God.
Dumb culture war thing. So I saw that and it was just, ugh.
Because Memorial Day is the day for the fallen troops, right? And then it's Veterans Day for the troops that are alive, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't quite realize that distinction, but okay.
Yeah.
Good point.
So I think probably people are like, well, you know, you're disrespecting the dead. That's probably one of the.
But I wonder, what if you're like an undead veteran? Where do you get your day? You get to celebrate both. I don't think you should get the double dip.
You mean if you're a zombie?
Yeah, like if you're a zombie, you know, like which one should you count as?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe every day is your day if you're
right.
a
with
zombie.
Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Halloween right. is your day.
You got another day. You got too many days.
Or
yeah,
day
you got
the
too
day.
Many days. Yeah. And Jong, I mean, this is kind of your fault for living in California, but Millie, Adam, looking forward to the weekend coming up. We're going upstate. Somewhere, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know exactly where, but I trust Teen to have taken care of all that. So
that's cool.
I'm just gonna ride along. We're all gonna cook, which is gonna be very interesting.
That's right.
Millie,
yeah.
You're an amazing cook, and you, I think, often do most of that. But I think we're all taking charge of a dinner this time. So I'm
or one meal at least.
Is it a secret? Like what you guys are gonna prepare? Like
oh no, I don't think so.
No, I don't think we're doing some Iron Chef thing. But
I was that nerd who put together a Google sheet for people to fill out.
I really appreciate that. That was that was good.
But
good
hold on, like everyone here is a good cook though. So
I'm not.
Adam, I've never tasted anything you've made.
I wouldn't say I'm a good cook. I'm not awful. I can follow directions. And
yeah, I
you know,
Adam
I can make certain
cook.
Things. I can make certain things. So
I think that's half of it. And I see that you're signed up to make French toast on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think.
So my wife signed me up for something that she feels confident that she
or
doesn't
Saturday.
Have to do like 90% of. I can do like, you know, 80% of it. No. It'll be good. It'll be good.
Are you guys gonna be in a cabin or are you gonna be camping?
No, we got a house.
Oh, okay. Because the cooking when you're camping is like a totally different. It's like
That would be
specialized set of cooking skills.
Hot dog on a stick type. Oh man, I would love to have that.
Escape from Plan A.
Escape. Escape. Escape.
From Plan A.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Escape from Plan A. I'm your host, Chris. I love this lineup. We have today, we've got Adam. What's up, Adam?
Hello, everyone.
Jong. What's up, Jong?
Hi.
And our very, very good friend, Millie. So good that we're not even going to call you a guest because you're just part of the family. Millie, what's up?
Aw. Hi, guys.
Yeah, and it's Memorial Day weekend, and you know we're bringing this pod for you. This is kind of a last-minute thing because we were supposed to do an unverified accounts episode about the White Tiger and Gangs of Wasseypur, but that's been pushed back a week. So, hey, that gives you guys, our listeners, an extra week to watch and read those books/movies so you can follow along with our episode, which will probably come out in the next week.
Sounds more like a paper extension to me.
Nice. So anyway, very glad to have this very cool crew together. I think it's our first time potting as a quartet. And, you know, we never run out of things to talk about. There's always some crazy shit, both big and petty. So why don't we just dive right into it?
Let's do it.
So what should we start off with? Should we start off with this John Cena thing?
All right. Yeah, jump into the deep end.
All right. The TLDR of this thing is, okay, so apparently John Cena was off in China or East Asia promoting Fast 9. I don't know the exact title of that. But he said in one interview that he referred to Taiwan as a country. And then later on, he had to go on Weibo. Is that how you say it? Or is it Weibo or whatever? The Chinese Twitter equivalent, Weibo. And he gave this very heartfelt apology about, you know, how he respects China. And, you know, he like, you know, didn't mean any disrespect. And then people in the U.S. got upset that, oh, he's like bending the knee to China, yada, yada, yada. Okay, but before we delve into this, do you guys have a favorite wrestler? Like from when you were a kid or something?
Yeah, well, I'll date myself with that. My favorite wrestler was the Ultimate Warrior.
Wow. Is he still alive? I feel like he might be dead.
He probably is dead. But it's become more of a franchise than just one person. So I feel like a couple of people have taken on that name. But
like Captain America or something.
Yeah. So unlike Hulk Hogan, which is just the dude's name, Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior. Yeah. Yeah. But he was my favorite. I liked his like colorful tassels and his mask. And it was the era of a lot of wrestlers having masks.
Oh. So. I see. John Millie.
Well, I definitely don't have a favorite wrestler. are you bringing this up because Cena was a wrestler?
Yeah, John Cena's a wrestler. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you know that? I mean, he's pretty famous as an actor now. People might not actually know that he
right.
was a very
no,
good
I just
wrestler.
Kind of caught wind of it when I Googled the story.
Oh, I see.
But didn't know much about him coming in since I didn't watch wrestling and I don't watch the Fast and the Furious movies. Mm-hmm. I was quite out of the loop.
What about you, Joe?
I was not a huge fan of wrestling, but I think was it I, like also I get Monster Truck Racing kind of mixed up. So I think I was a fan of The Undertaker, and then there's also Monster Truck that's the Gravedigger.
Yeah.
Or like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I don't know. I think I went to like a Monster Truck Racing thing and thought the Gravedigger was cool.
yeah.
And then, probably because of that, I was like, "Oh, the Undertaker!" You know, like probably is friends with the Gravedigger.
or they're rivals. Undertaker driving the monster truck. Although they'd have to make the cabin extra big because he's huge.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's true. Yeah,
wasn't a huge fan of Hulk.
No, I wasn't either.
But that's
I did not like
mainly
Hulk Hogan.
Like my memories having to do with wrestling have more to do with like kids that went to my school that were big fans of wrestling than wrestling itself. You know. And so my distaste for wrestling is more about those kids than...
Oh, yeah. Bad association.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
And that's why I don't like Hulk.
Kurt Angle was my favorite wrestler. I loved
how, really?
Yeah. He was such a good heel. I loved how he always talked trash to the crowd. But anyway, all right. Let's actually get into the topic we were going to talk about. All right. So what are you guys' feelings on this? We saw people, especially on Reddit. I mean, this is exactly the type of thing that would make the typical Reddit American guy really, really upset. Because John Cena, he was the Marine and the Marine. He's our you know, golden son. And there he is, not only apologizing to China, but doing it in Chinese. I mean, I saw the video. I don't know if you guys have actually seen it, but John Cena kind of went viral a few years ago. Because he had that video in which he was talking about how much he loved the lao gan ma sauce, and he spoke it in Chinese, and even Chinese people were like, you know what, his Chinese is pretty good, and not just for a non-native speaker. They're like, you know, he was pretty good, and so he's like making this apology in Chinese, and it really does not seem like, you know, one of those corporate, you know, I'm sorry if I offended anyone, this goes against my values, that kind of thing. He seemed like really into it. And I think that really, really upset a lot of people. So what do you guys think?
But can I ask a quick question?
Like, sure.
What is the, like, why was he making what was read as a statement about him considering Taiwan a country or not? Like, what was the, was he just saying something on like a tweet of his or something?
I think it was in an interview. Okay. From the what I've read and seen of that, I think he was like giving some interview. I don't know if it was in Taiwan or something, but apparently referred it to a country.
Yeah, and, he was saying that Taiwan would be the first country that F9 would be available to watch.
Interesting.
Which is like, in a sense, very like kind of who cares, right? Because, you know, I mean, we probably call like Puerto Rico a country often just, you know, by a slip of our tongue.
That's
by
true.
Country, we just mean, you know, like a territory, kind of state that is more than just a province. I don't know, whatever.
But it's
it
a little different with Puerto Rico. Americans don't want people to realize that you know, that we've like colonized Puerto Rico and that it's a territory of ours.
Yeah, whereas it's like, also not like, you know, also like China's not trying to, you know, pry Puerto Rico apart. And there's no like, you know, there's no history of like civil war in America. It's not like the South fled to Puerto Rico. Like that yeah, you're right. That's totally different context. But I can easily see how someone, even like Chinese loyalists would accidentally say that just of, you know, in English. Yeah. But that's the context and background. So what were your guys' reactions when you heard this story?
I find it incredibly, I find it silly and just sort of the histrionics of it. I feel like the reactions are so outsized to how much the, you know, the people who get upset, like that I feel that they should care about it. Like, and, you know, American soft power and America has always had sort of like certain things that you couldn't do or say or whatnot. And people would apologize for sort of crossing our own cultural lines. So, you know, I find it just to be sort of really silly. And yeah, I mean, Cena's going to say or do what he thinks he needs to do or say so that, you know, he can continue to make money. And, you know, I think maybe he does have some sort of affinity for China and his fans there. And certainly because he's learned, you know, Mandarin, that's going a lot farther than I think a lot of other celebrities would go for their audiences. So so maybe he has a genuine sort of, appreciation for China. So, I mean, I don't find it to mean much of anything.
Yeah, the whole thing strikes me as a bit of a comedy of errors. You know, it just kind of feels like everyone's fucked up on the studio side, including Cena. You know, firstly, if you're working for a studio, if you're an actor working for a studio who is dead set on making massive profits on a movie in China, then you need to, you know, demonstrate that you have an understanding of Chinese culture and a sensitivity to some of the issues. And so Cena clearly put his foot in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But I also think that the way he apologized was incredibly off-putting. Mm. I actually didn't see it as being very sincere. I saw it as being quite calculated. And it struck me as racist, I guess, you know? It seemed like it was a very obsequious apology.
Mm.
And it seemed to me that some PR, stupid PR person had told him, oh, you know, the Chinese want you to grovel. Yeah, so, you know, I didn't like the tone of the apology. I didn't understand why. Although, Chris, I can see why you would say that it wasn't corporate. That's true. But it also struck me as just too, I don't know. He was like, I'm very, 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 very sorry. You know, Colbert made fun of it. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I guess there's like the corporate type of apology, which is the, you know, I'm sorry if I offended anyone. The you know, where they purposely try to, as like another F you to the mm-hmm. people.
I'm sorry that you were so sensitive that you were offended.
And they purposely like make sure that you see that they're reading it off a piece of paper. But then there's the other now very popular genre of apology, which I think this is kind of like, which is the YouTube apology where the influencers cry and all that. So, okay, I get what you're saying, that there is this new form of, you know, so-called corporate apology that this may have maybe mimicking. I have no idea, but Yeah, but when I say corporate apology, I'm talking about the very stilted wooden PR statement. Mm-hmm. But there is
that
also another
isn't really an apology. Is that what you mean? Like,
yeah.
What bugs me about a lot of these apologies is that they don't feel very specific, you know?
Mm.
And I would put this apology in that category. Like if that's how you're going to apologize, then probably better just to not apologize.
And I did read that like some of the Chinese netizens were not happy with the apology either.
Wait, what were their problem?
I didn't read exactly what their problems were with it, but I saw that, like, I saw a headline that he had to do it again. Like, he had to do another apology.
Oh, man.
An apology for the apology.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it was because they sort of felt like he was just maybe too overboard. Like, it was so apologetic that it bordered on you know, inauthentic or just sort of unbelievable.
Right. I mean, it's
almost
just sort
silly,
of,
like
it,
insulting.
It was very, I feel he's centering himself at this point and sort of like exaggerating his own importance. Mm-hmm. Like, does it really matter? I just kind of wonder, you know, if moviegoers in China really care what John Cena thinks about China. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's probably kind of obvious to them that John Cena is a dumb American actor, you know? He doesn't get China. He's not invested in China. He's not, you know, he doesn't know who China is or what China's about. Mm-hmm. He only knows what he needs to know to, you know, do these press tours. Like, okay, it's possible that some of his like diehard Chinese fans are disappointed or something. But in that case, I feel like they need a wake up call, you know, like this guy is not in your, you know, in your camp.
Yeah, I'm kind of along those lines. I think this is kind of like we're seeing what it's like for things to be reversed, right? Because as Americans have long criticized, you know, foreign celebrities or foreign companies, you know, for not not seeing things the way we do, right? And expect them to like stick to our political values and our political positions, which we, you know, we know is kind of like a little ridiculous. Like, you know, you might be able to expect like an American celebrity, I suppose, to like fully understand American issues and have a nuanced position, or not even really. Like, we've talked about this, right? Like, we
at least know how to toe the line, right?
Yeah. You know, okay, like one, I think Millie, you brought up a good point, which is like, okay, if this is a promotional tour, and so like there should have been a PR person like working through all these points, seeing that it could, like, foreseeing that it could be an issue, right? And give them talking points, things not to say, this and that. And it might very well be the case that they would just kind of have to pick, like they can either aim to do their best in Taiwan, or they recognize China as a larger market and they make the practical choice to piss off Taiwan instead, because somebody's going to get mad no matter what on this issue.
Well, my main issue with this is that, okay, well, if you, like, what are these people who are, the Americans who are mad at him, what are you mad at him? What are you mad about? Are you mad that the Chinese people got mad, or are you mad that he apologized? Because if they're mad, if their stance is he shouldn't have apologized, and if that means Fast 9 tanks in China, then so be it. I can get with that. Being like, right. Yeah, you know what?
Sure.
That's perfectly acceptable. But if their stance is the Chinese have no right to get mad at this, and they should accept our cultural ambassadors and products, even if they don't like it, then that's that's total bullshit. Because you have no right to the Chinese market, just like China has no right to the American market. No,
exactly. The hypocrisy. I mean, as usual, the hypocrisy is on full display.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is something very jarring, because like Americans have this whole complex about high profile American figures, from, you know, presidents to actors who are, you know, basically the same. They play the same cultural function as presidents in representing our best and the brightest. Remember that whole like Obama apology tour that the right wingers never, ever forgave him for when he went around his Middle East tour shortly after 2008 victory? This has like the same flavor, except it's even worse, because China is much more of a threat for American dominance than the Middle East ever was. So it's like for so long, American tastes have dictated what people around the world could say or do. It didn't even have to get to the point of, you know, apology. Like mm-hmm. Like you already knew what you had to do to, like, you know, break into the American market or things like that. You had mm-hmm. to, you know, totally learn a different language. You had to, I don't know, play up stereotypes about your own people. I mean, we've already heard stories of, you know, how like Asian actors and actresses were treated when they came to Hollywood. I think Jackie Chan has stories about how this is when he was, you know, like the most famous star in Hong Kong. He comes to Hollywood and they're just like, oh, you know your place. You're nobody here. We're going to just treat you just like, you know, basically like a stuntman, you know, that's all you are here. So for now, people to be like, oh, you know, poor Hollywood superstars, they have to, you know, eat shit a few times. Like, what the fuck? I'm not going to die on that hill. I don't give a damn.
Yeah. Just like,
Like, did China overreact? I mean, probably, you know, China overreacts all the time, but yeah, that's not my problem. To throw my body in the line for Hollywood? Fuck that.
If you were Cena, you mean?
Hmm?
if you're in his position?
No, people who are trying to make this into a moral crusade, like we must stop, you know, we must protect the dignity of Hollywood against China. Like, first of all, Hollywood never had any dignity. This is just the same shit, except now the flow is reversed and whatever, you know, as I said, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I think F9 will do fine in China.
Well, that's the thing. The Fast and the Furious franchise is like the one American franchise that does very well in China. Star Wars fail. All the Disney remakes fail.
Well, Marvel does well. Like the
Marvel and stuff. Fast and Furious. Like the biggest, dumbest movies do well in China, which explains it. And I think if this means less American entitlement into China and just like around the world in general, realizing that you can't just, you know, there's just like too many landmines. Maybe it's not even worth it. So America kind of like stays out of China's sphere and China stays out of America's sphere in terms of like cultural stuff. I think that's probably good in the long run. They're like, it's good that, you know, each country exerts more independence for of its media.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I see the hypocrisy continuing because I just don't think Hollywood is going to give up the chance to both criticize China and, you know, try to profit in China.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think Hollywood will continue to try to bully. But I don't know if they'll be successful. I just don't think that
while accusing the CCP of being the bullies.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't think that. I don't think that'll work. I think it worked in other times, but times have changed.
Well, the new right wing. Well, the right wing has always hated Hollywood, but their new attack on Hollywood is that it's actually too obsequious to China. I think they're blaming everything from, you know, the disaster of the new Star Wars movies to
Wait, China is to blame for?
Yeah, China's to blame for everything.
They basically blame feminism in China for why movies suck.
Right.
Now.
Right.
Too many women in lead roles and being really annoying in those roles, and China, you know, meddling in scripts and all that. So.
Right, the Chinese censors, you know, there's...
Yeah.
It's this just flailing, and I think it's mainly insecurity at the waning influence of just, like, American soft power.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, like, on that note, like, do you know how ridiculous it gets? It's like, even, like, League of Legends, people complain that, like, Riot is going to design certain characters to placate the Chinese market and this and that, and it's like, dude, like... It's not that serious, you know, like people are just designing characters based on what they want and what the market supports, you know, and there's no fucking like conspiracy theory that, you know, that like just because like a Chinese company invested that all of a sudden they control everything about the creative direction of something.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be like a very startling feeling of loss of control. I mean, first they got like the SJWs taking away their beloved heroes and emasculating them or whatever. Then you got the chinks across the ocean now taking charge. They're like, oh my god, you know, this used to be our thing. We got to make everyone. We got to create everyone's taste. And you know, especially as like, and as I said, this game's never been fair, right? So it's like, especially as like an Asian American, after all the bullshit Hollywood's done to pretty much almost every group imaginable, now they're crying. Be like, fuck off, you know? like
that,
we care.
That part of it really is what gets me as well, is that they like to try to make it seem like they never had any sort of third rail topics, or they never tried to control sort of the narrative at all to enter like the United States market. I'm like, that is just that's not true. Like, it's just blatantly, of course they've done that. And maybe it was at a time where like it wasn't so obvious because there was no social media or whatever, but there have always been rules. It's always been political.
Yeah,
so
or it's like you never even had a hope of breaking in because you like didn't know English, or you know you like
exactly
the cultural nuances you wouldn't get unless you were American. So now you don't get to monopolize a thing anymore. Just as I said, I'm not saying it's fair that China overreacts to everything, but it is more, I think, evening the playing field. And I think if you don't like it, then just give up on the Chinese market. Just say fuck you to the Chinese market and just like don't expect them to buy your stuff. And problem solved, I think.
Go on your merry way.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be probably pretty good for just American culture in general. Just being a bit more domestic and focusing more on more culturally specific things instead of trying
staying
to always
in our own lane.
Instead of always trying to make blockbusters and shit like that, I think that's probably good in the long run.
I think it would get boring though.
I mean, it's boring now though, because like everything is just, I think everything is just
true.
Made
actually,
to please everybody.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
There is that point.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the John Cena thing. If you guys have any more comments, let me just pipe in later. But moving on, getting a bit more local in New York City.
Taking our own advice.
Yeah, taking our own advice. Good point, Adam. last week, there was a kerfuffle because, this has to do with the mayor race. Andrew Yang was on this interview with Ziwei, who is this black female comedian, and she asked him a bunch of questions, one of which was, what's your favorite subway stop? And he said, Times Square is my stop, meaning he lives around the area, so that's my favorite stop. And some people thought this was a really lame answer. And then the New York Daily News
had this cartoon. Real New Yorkers don't go to Times Square, right?
This raised a whole bunch of like really interesting issues. I'll get to that, but I'll just explain what happened. And then the New York Daily News ran this cartoon where Andrew Yang was like running out of the Times Square station, and there was like tourist hawkers being like, oh, here comes another tourist.
Oh, yeah.
And then Yang's campaign issued a statement saying these persistent attacks, this was not an isolated incident about Andrew Yang not being a real New Yorker, even though he was like born in New York and he's lived in New York City for like the last 20 years, but people keep denying him like real New Yorker status is, at the very least somewhat racially tinged. So I was wondering what your guys' thoughts were on this. Like when you, because this has been something that people have been accusing Andrew Yang of from the beginning. Like, what are your thoughts when you hear something like that?
I have a couple questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, as a non-New Yorker.
Yeah, I'm not a New Yorker. Like, what? How significant is a subway, like, favorite subway stop? Like,
well, that's the thing.
I'm asking myself, what's my favorite Muni stop or BART stop? And, like, it doesn't matter. Like, my favorite is where I'm trying to go.
Yes.
Well, that's a very good point because people made that point being like, wait a minute, like, why would you have a favorite subway stop in the first place, especially in New York City?
Maybe it's like a ridiculous question because it's like a, I don't know if that's actually a subway stop, but like,
the most supremely tourist answer to say Grand Central.
That's the only one I know even, but
Exactly. I think Grand Central is, I heard, the number one most photographed location for tourists.
How about the train depot down by the High Line, the kebab thing, or the beehive?
Yeah, the whatever that big ugly Shwana building they had to shut down because too many people jumped off it. Yeah, okay,
oh, that's sad.
Yeah,
I have no idea what you're talking. Wait, Adam, to commit suicide or to like?
It's the big sculpture that's at Hudson Yards.
The big Hudson
Yards.
The shawarma.
The
shawarma. Yeah.
Oh, it's the same color as a shawarma in the shape.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That.
Hideous.
Nobody's photographing that piece of garbage. Yeah. No. But yeah, because like New York subway stations are all equally ugly.
They're full of shit and piss, and no one has a favorite one. Maybe
a little less ugly, but this is not the Moscow Metro. Okay. This is like it's horrible. And
it's not Seoul Metro. That's for sure.
In fact, the type of person who actually has a favorite subway stop, guarantee you, is like a recent transplant who is still in love with the city. These are the type of people who will seriously say shit like, "I have a relationship. My relationship with New York City
is like, through the subway."
The only right answer, and I'll give credit to Andrew Yang for this. The only sane answer to give to that station is the one that's closest to me, because that's the one question I take to come home. Because I'm a man of the people. I don't take fucking Uber. I don't take or like any kind of company cars. I take the subway like real people, and I love my local stop because that means I'm almost home. That's the only sane answer you should be able to give. But anyway, as I said, this was not the first time he's been accused of this. And to be fair to his critics, Yang has also tried to play up this silly he's trying to play like that thing where he tries to be like a New Yorker and give off that image. So, it goes both ways as well. But anyway,
but every candidate does that, right? It's not just Yang who tries to do that.
Yeah. So anyway, just straight up question. Did you think that that cartoon and this whole sentiment is racist?
Definitely.
You think so?
It reminds me of the birthers with Obama.
Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same thing,
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
That said, I will say I wish he hadn't said Times Square.
But that's where he lives, right? It's like,
I know, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. I such a love-hate relationship with Andrew Yang. I've already decided. I'm going to vote for him.
Okay, okay. So he's number one in your rank choice.
Yes, however, it is with reluctance, and he does seem to keep doing things that are disappointing. Saying, you know, just being kind of annoying, but being annoying, you know, and kind of basic, you know, which is...
Sure.
He has these very basic takes about stuff, which is frustrating. But I think ultimately, like I watched, I don't, did you guys watch part of the, any of the first debate?
Are you crazy? Why would I watch
it? I know. It was so weird. It was such a weird debate. I don't know. I just remember, I tuned in kind of late, so I had to go back and watch part of the beginning. But when I tuned in, I was like, who are these weirdos? Like, these are this is like such a weird group of people. And they're running for New York, the mayor of New York. That is really problematic.
I think you have to, on a deep level, I think you have to be like a self-hater. Maybe even have like suicidal tendencies to want to be mayor of New York. There is no good outcome.
Well, that's the other question, right? Who runs for mayor?
There's something got to be wrong with something wrong with your brain cells to want this job that has not ended good for like the last 2 to 3 people. Look what's happened to...
Or anyone, really. I mean...
what happened to Bloomberg? He just got totally clowned by Trump. That's going to be on his epitaph. Rudy Giuliani...
billionaire and clown.
But they amassed a lot of money and power.
That Borat scene. True. I mean, that's what, among the many embarrassing things people are going to remember him for.
That black drip. That time is like...
Giuliani, with the hair
really
dye.
Bad. Yep.
But I mean, you have to be pathologically ambitious to think to run for mayor of New York, because it's never your end goal. No one's like.
But that's the thing I'm saying. It's been a disaster for everyone who's occupied that position for like the last few cycles. So
I don't disagree, but it's still seen as like a pathway to power, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe, but I think you got, people are just really. But
I think people have to. I think you make a good point, Chris. Job. That people need to recalculate.
Yeah,
but I still think people
doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be working, but
at least not for beyond that,
right?
Yeah. But anyway, Adam and John, what do you guys think? Do you think this cartoon, or not just this cartoon, but this whole sentiment is it racist? Andrew Yang not being
John, did you want to go or?
Yeah, sure. I think that one, the cartoon is racist. Yeah. Just look at it. I mean, and then the incident. I mean, how many times has it come up that like is Yang a New Yorker or not? Like. Just really simply, you know, like if he was born there and he lives there, he's a New Yorker. And like how many articles does there have to be? Like I do think it's racist. I think that the fixation on it is, you know, just another example of like, you know, perpetual foreigner phenomenon and this and that. We've talked about it so many times. Simple yes for me.
Yeah. So I do agree that the treatment of him both for the is he a New Yorker, not a New Yorker, definitely racist. The particular political cartoon, the first time I saw it, maybe I just wasn't in a mental state to be like, is it like thinking, is this racist or not racist? Like I do for most things, but for whatever reason, when I was looking at it, I did not think about that. But I saw that like people like Ron Kim and other people on Twitter and social media were pointing it out. And when I looked at it again, I can definitely see, and I agree that it's a racist political ad. I just think that like the whole, are they a New Yorker, not a New Yorker? It's incredibly silly. It's like additionally, like, so an earlier incident that happened before the whole favorite subway stop thing, was I think someone probably asked him what's like your favorite New York restaurant or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he said Shake Shack.
No, he said favorite New York burger.
New York burger, right. Yeah. Okay. So then, and then he said Shake Shack was his favorite New York burger. And people were making fun of him for that. And I'm like, look, first of all, Shake Shack was founded in New York. So
it would be my like top
what's
three
the
in New York.
Problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, yeah. Maybe it's a little basic, like you're saying, Millie. A lot of his answers are basic, but I'm not looking to see whether he's got the most esoteric knowledge of New York City eateries. you know? So I just find and maybe it's because he's high profile, but I think just the fixation on this definitely has a racial element. My first instinct was like, that's a really weird question. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I actually a New Yorker? Should I have a favorite one? But I'm like, no, I don't, because why would I have a favorite subway stop? It's just a weird question. I've never heard anyone of my friends when I was living in New York like say, oh, I have a favorite subway stop. Right.
I will say I grew up in New York and I have several favorite stops.
Okay.
And I have a favorite train line as well.
Yeah, but is that because like you like the nature of the line, or is it just because of like you grew up there and like...
I think it has to do with how well you know the city. You know, maybe that's part of it.
Okay. And then maybe, wait, yeah,
so what are your favorite stops then?
Astor Place on the 6.
Well, I like that because it's the second closest stop to me. And
42nd Street and 7th. 42nd Street and 6th.
Okay.
On the F7 or 7. The 7 is my favorite train. It's a very reliable train for one thing. It goes to, it also, you know, connects Queens and Manhattan. So I spend a lot of my childhood on that train.
Okay.
It has a really nice view, you know, when you come out of Grand Central, you know, to Hunter's Point.
All right. See, the view part seems to be more connected to like the train itself, like
the line.
Some aspect
of the line.
Mm-hmm. But you just said like, oh,
it's also the type of people who ride the 7. Which is obviously connected to, you know, who lives on the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Serviced by the 7.
Okay.
Who lives in those neighborhoods. So I kind of get where they're coming from. I mean, I also get where you guys are coming from. It's kind of a dumb question.
To be fair, though, did the interviewer make fun of Yang, or is it other viewers?
No.
Right?
Other viewers
were.
Yeah,
so like, maybe it's a dumb question, but you know, she shouldn't catch. Is she?
No, I'm not saying she should. I'm not saying she should. I'm just saying that no one's actually like critical of anyone else.
And I find that weird. Also, the Ziwei herself, like the character she plays, I think in this is basically like a dumb interviewer. So she's supposed to ask dumb questions.
Right.
So
okay.
The fact that she asked this question is making fun of the question itself, but it's just like this weird Twitter crowd who, you know, just really, I mean, that's the problem. Like one reason I don't want Andrew Yang to win is I think he's going to feed this pond scum of internet people who are going, because he's by far the most socially media relevant candidate. Like nobody else even registers. So him winning will just be like, you know, like all those like bottom dwelling sea creatures that eat the snow, like the decomposing matter that fly down. That's gonna be snow. Yang as a mayor. And I also don't think he'd be a good mayor anyway. I think he's like,
you mean like
too nice
like,
of a guy.
Like catfish? Catfish are bottom dwelling,
bottom feeders.
Feeders.
Well, don't catfish live in lakes? I'm talking about like the ocean.
Oh, okay.
The marine snow. That's the term I'm talking
down
about.
Marine snow. I didn't know that was a term, marine
snow. That's a real term.
What is that?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's okay. So if you've ever watched these documentaries about, you know, deep sea creatures, you'll see that underneath the ocean, it's basically all black, but you'll see this constant stream of just like white matter.
Detritus, yeah.
And that's all decaying dead animals who live in the upper layers of the ocean, all decomposing and falling down. And all the like hideous creatures that live on the ocean floor eat that. That's their sustenance.
Okay, so who is who in the
so I'm saying like this
metaphor?
Whole like Twitter ecosystem need Yang to provide the marine snow to be relevant. If someone like Catherine Garcia, who is apparently like the front runner now, at least according to a couple of polls, if she wins, she's boring as hell. There's no social media goal to be derived from her, which I think is a good thing. It would just be a circus if he won. And I think he's a nice guy. I think that's what's going to make him a bad mayor. And I'd rather not see him put in that position. So that's one reason. I can't vote, but if I did, that's why I wouldn't vote for him. One of the main reasons. As for what I think, I think the cartoon itself is not racist in that it just picked up this lazy joke. And I doubt the cartoon is even really delve deeply into the issue. Some people said Andrew Yang was caricaturized like by having like small eyes, but you know what? That he does have small eyes, like most Asians. That's not a bad thing. Let's not like self own ourselves by being offended by our own ethnic features. But I do think this whole questioning of him as a real New Yorker, it reveals the fact that in order to be like a native New Yorker, it's a very extreme thing because you have either very very rich people. who are native New Yorkers, or it's more like working class people. And the most people in the middle are transplants because most people don't fit into those categories.
Yeah. But isn't New York City mostly like a lot of transplants?
Well, yeah, yeah. So the only, I think if you're a native New Yorker, you're probably like really rich or kind of like very working class.
Right.
Like there are very few kind of like middle class native New York City people. And I think there is this thing where if you see the kind of like an Asian white collar person, you just assume that they are transplant. Chances are they probably are, you know, who came and they're moving into like Midtown to work at like a big four accounting firm or a law firm or that thing. And there is probably this kind of like aversion and disdain for those types of people, even from other transplants. Because like there's a lot of transplant on transplant violence, at least on social media, where everyone's trying to one-up each other, trying to prove their bona fides, even though you're all just, oh, so what? You live your 7 years versus like 4 years. Who cares? And you know, the most like anti-gentrifying people are gentrifiers themselves because they're very insecure. Right. But so it's that bullshit. And I think in that battle, the kind of Asian that Andrew Yang is, which is like a white collar normie kind of Asian, is the lowest man on the totem pole, which is why it's really annoying and kind of pathetic seeing some of these like blue check Asian American types being like, I'm gonna bully Andrew Yang online. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, you got bullied too. There's this great Simpsons clip in which Martin Prince becomes kind of like cool for a day, and he's like, he like pushes like another nerd into the bathroom, and he's like, the thrill that it wasn't me, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
That's the thing I get. So I'll be like, shut the fuck up.
Who would have thought that pushing a boy into the girl's lavatory could be such a thrill? The screams, the humiliation, the fact that it wasn't me. I've never felt so alive.
Great, Martin.
Yeah, we're all transplants. We're all outsiders. We're all Asians. We're all chinks here.
Other than Millie. Millie's the
except for Millie, yeah.
I am a chink, however. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, let me make it clear. Like, I think that Andrew Yang could be a fine mayor, but I feel like there would need to be some changes. So I don't know if he's capable of those changes. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit concerning. I think he, you know, like if this question of whether he's a real New Yorker continues to come up, then one thing that he could do to help himself would be to not be so diplomatic.
Mm, you know, yes,
he is such a nice guy. He needs to grow a spine. You know, mm-hmm.
That's the real New Yorker.
This is New York. He needs to be a lot tougher. He can't be wishy-washy and, you know, be a people pleaser. You know, I just think that quality is like that quality of people pleasing is actually deeply un-New Yorkerly. Mm. That's kind of a problem. Yeah.
Especially for the leadership of New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, he can take a page out of Ron Kim's book. You know, I think Ron has done a great job of, you know, talking the talk and walking the walk. He's been on top of this nursing home situation with Andrew Cuomo since the beginning of the pandemic.
Right.
And he hasn't backed down.
Pulled no punches. No punches were pulled.
And I think that's, you know, very respectable. And the two of them are apparently friends. So I think Andrew should go to Ron for advice, you know?
Well, yeah, no, Ron's a big booster of Andrew.
There's also another guy running for mayor, Art Chang. He's like polling at like 0.5%. But
I like Art Chang.
He seems like a good guy, but you know, I think it's probably easy to come off as good when nobody was really paying attention to you. But you know, I mean, hopefully
he's been invisible.
Hopefully he's for real, and maybe later he'll rise to another position. But actually, I want to get to that whole Shake Shack thing, and which the subway thing, I think, was also somewhat revealing of it. Is this so some of the worst people online, like someone like a Jessica Valenti, got on this whole subway thing, and she would say something like, "Oh, I bet Andrew Yang's favorite pizza place is Sbarro's," which is obviously a play on the Michael Scott thing, which Andrew Yang has often been compared
probably
to.
Probably is though.
But, probably.
God, but the there's a Sbarro's thing, in Times Square.
There is.
The stupid thing, if you're doing that as an attack, is guess what? People really like Michael Scott. You're not talking about David Brent, which is the Ricky Gervais version of the same character in The Office, who was really despicable. But Michael Scott, at the end of the day, is really good at his job. He really cares about his employees. and is the hero of the office whom people love. And if you're using that to attack your political opponent, I don't think that's a good comparison. And I think whatever Andrew Yang's inexplicable popularity is the fact that people kind of like him. So attacking with Michael Scott is a very dumb move. But anyway, in that same tweet, I think either she or someone else are like, oh yeah, and I bet his favorite Italian restaurant is Olive Garden. And it's just like, shut the fuck up. Like, like that kind of attack is so irritating. And if you're doing that to attack someone like Yang, it's only going to make him more popular. Because people are going to see that and be like, hey, I like the Olive Garden. Or they might be like, hey, where I live, you know, we don't have a fucking Mario Batali restaurant like right around the corner. I don't live next to, what's that Italian market in Flatiron called?
Italy.
We don't have a fucking Italy around the block. Olive Garden might be the closest place to me. And you're going to make fun of me for that? Like, fuck you. So.
Oh, but I was going to say, you know, one thing I did notice in watching the first mayoral debate was that there were so many comments. So people, you know, I watched it on
New York One.
I can't remember which network it was, but there were comments being posted, you know, throughout on the sidebar. And so many of them were pro Yang.
Like live tweets or live comments. Yang.
Yeah, exactly. Live comments. That it was shocking. And then there were people saying he's the only one who's smart enough to do the job. And I was like,
Yeah, that's a little weird
maybe,
to say.
Maybe racism, maybe this is like the one case where racism will just get him the job, you know?
Well, he also ran
whether
on
we
math,
like it or not.
Right? So.
Right, of course. Right.
So.
I don't know. We might be stuck with him. I don't know, but it sounds like his ratings have fallen since, right? Because that debate was a few weeks ago.
I mean, who knows how the race will go. As I said, I can't even vote. So, I mean, I just find Andrew Yang very interesting as a person, and the kind of emotions he raises in people, especially in Asian Americans, also very interesting. So I just like observing him, and you know, just like as like a social experiment. there was also something I think that the whole cartoon raised an important issue of, because I think I saw Ron Kim tweet about this, in which he said he didn't care about the intent of the cartoon, as the outcome was that it made a lot of Asian Americans feel like it was racist. And I think that's a critical debate in this. Like, so where do you guys fall on that? The whole intent versus outcome debate. I mean, just to refresh people's memories, there are people who say, you know what, as long as if someone has good intentions but says something that might be offensive, you should be more understanding of that. Other people say, no, intent doesn't matter. Outcome is the only thing that matters. So if people get pissed off, that means it was racist. Where do you guys fall on that?
I think it's hard to generalize, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of,
because are we still talking about the cartoon incident?
No, or just like in general.
Just in general.
That's true. There's definitely cases where outcome is all that matters, right? Like, sorry, I didn't mean to crash the car and, you know, driving drunk and kill, like, okay, you know?
Well, it would matter in what you're charged with. Like,
but I mean, like, yes, that's true. That's true. But from my perspective, it doesn't really matter. The outcome is that you killed somebody, right? Like, that a tragedy came of it. And I guess you're right. Like, okay, fine. What do you do after that? You have to charge him, and there has to be some kind of accountability, to what extent. So you're right. It does matter there. But my question, I kind of is like at least as far as this specific cartoon is concerned, is like, what was the intent anyway?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, political cartoons are not sort of these innocent creations that are just sort of there, right? So what was the intent?
What is the statement that the cartoon is trying to make? It was not clear to me personally.
But are you saying that it is a very case by case?
I am saying that I agree with Millie that it is like hard to generalize. But then also more specifically, like if I were to try and apply that to this specific case, I don't know what the intent was. I don't get any like statement about Yang, his politics, his like all I don't understand what the intent was, if it wasn't to like make him appear to be a foreigner, to paint him as an outsider.
Yeah, I do think intent matters, and I do think there's a big danger. All these people who say outcome's the only thing that matters, it's going to burn you very soon as well. Because like somebody out there is going to either be opportunistic or like hypersensitive.
Right.
So even good faith people who, you know, really do want you know, only outcome that only outcome matters stance to protect people, they're probably going to get taken advantage of.
That's true.
But also, intent has to make sense. You can't honestly say, "Oh, I had no idea." You know, saying that Nazis are great is anti-Semitic. You know, that's obviously right. Total bullshit.
In front
that's
like of the Holocaust
most obvious
Museum.
Example. Like, yeah. Right. So intent has to make sense. So I think, John, that's what you're raising. Like, you don't really know what the intent of this cartoon is to even make that judgment. Oh, I can believe that he. Yeah. So also, like, political cartoons are, you know, really lazy often. So he might really have had no intent, and that he just had to crank something out and be like, "Oh, I saw something on Twitter today." So yeah, it's hard to judge.
Yeah, I mean, I think the intent was definitely to paint Yang as an outsider. Now, if there was actually intent, if that intent was based on like a racial feeling or unconscious bias of Asians or perpetual outsiders, I don't know. The only thing I can say for certain is that it's definitely to say that he was an outsider, right? So that was the intent of the 100% intent, or the intent of the cartoon that is sort of, you can't argue that it wasn't. But, you know, it's going to be you, like, the outcome of it is going to be some people are really pissed, others aren't. And then, you know, people are going to use it as a political tool, right? One way or the other. But you make a good point, Chris, that like people have to be careful what they wish for sometimes when it comes to these like black and white. Intent is only the only thing that matters versus outcome is the only thing that matters, because it's never 100% one way or the other.
Mil, do you have anything to add to that? I do want to hit a couple of our last topics as time is winding down.
Real quick.
No.
Okay. So I want to hit up this like Vincent Chin podcasting.
Talking
and
about bottom feeders, celebrities.
and somebody else brought up the Naomi Osaka French Open thing.
I want to just yell about that, man. But okay, anyway, let's talk about the Vincent Chin thing, because that was what pissed me off.
Yeah, that's important.
Earlier this week.
Well, so apparently I thought this Vincent Chin podcast would be something like a true crime documentary thing, but apparently they're going to fictionalize it. It's like a radio play, which I find...
Well, which is like advertising for an actual stage play.
Right.
I did not know that. Yeah. That makes this even dumber.
Okay. Before we get into that, any Frasier fans here? You guys ever
watched
Frasier?
I watched Frasier, yeah.
Yeah. Remember that episode where they try to put on a radio play, but it ends in a total disaster? Because
I don't remember that particular episode, but I can imagine the Frasier and his brother trying to do that.
No. Frasier drives everyone crazy because he becomes such like a nitpicky director. But
because isn't his job as like a radio shrink?
He's a radio shrink. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. His station puts on a radio play. So when I think of radio plays, I think of that episode. So I just thought I would throw that out there. Anyway, but yeah, so this is basically like a podcast play. It's fictionalized. Yep. Remy He of what's he most famous for?
No idea.
But he was in a couple of TV shows. He is playing Vincent Chin, and I think what's her name, Kelly Marie Tran's also in it, and
Gemma Chan produced
Tai
it.
Ma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gemma Chan's producing it.
Rosalind Chow is in it. David Harbour.
I don't know who those people are, so it doesn't matter.
David Harbour.
Yeah. Anyway, so these people are in this like fictionalized podcast, and the weird thing is Helen Zia, who's a famous Asian American writer and like an activist who really led the charge, I think years long charge to bring charges against Vincent Chin's murderers, said neither she nor Chin's family was contacted.
It's even weirder. Helen Zia is a character in this play.
Well, obviously she should be, because you can't tell the Vincent Chin story without her.
So they didn't even contact her to be like, "Can you play yourself?"
Yeah.
Well, maybe she wouldn't have to play herself, but you would think they would at least interview her and be like, "Hey, can you, you know, just check if
or
the script
is
right?
Or is it okay if we write something
or is
about
okay?"
You?
But so this is just weird. I think it is following in the footsteps of just like mining these racial atrocities as basically intellectual property.
Yeah.
And like, oh, the you know, slavery, Jim Crow, the death, the assassination of like Fred Hampton, Malcolm X, and I'm not saying that you cannot make great art of it. I think Spike Lee's Malcolm X movie, for example, is great, but you know, in these recent times, it's just very suspicious. It's just like you're just optioning them as if they're comic books. What do you guys think?
I mean, not just intellectual property, but as entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally don't understand how they could have not contacted the Chin family about it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that illegal? I'm sorry, I don't maybe understand how this how.
Well, it's not like it's a fictional work protected by copyright, so I don't know what law there would be. You know,
but
except
you're talking
the law
about people
of good
who are
courtesy.
Still alive. And yeah, I mean, right. Even if it wasn't, even if there is no actual, even if it's not a legal issue, it would simply be an issue of respect.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we're creating this project about Vincent, and you know, we would love for you to be okay with it. Here's what we're planning to do, etc.
Yeah.
So I find that to be really just in poor taste for them to have not done that. But also, guys, watch out. There's another series. There's another project in the works about Vincent Chin as well.
Oh, is there?
It's a limited series at Amazon. Okay. I'm just like, oh,
does Gemma Chan have anything to do with this? Is this like a...
No. Yeah, this is another project. It's with...
That's a different one. Okay.
Because she was salty about not being in CRA, right?
No, Gemma Chan was
in CRA. She was.
Gemma Chan, did you even watch that movie? She was...
No, I didn't. Well,
it was Jamie Chung who was salty about...
Jamie Chung was, yeah.
I forgot who it was.
No, but so... I mean, it's even worse. So like, this is a table read of a feature screenplay, and they basically are just doing this podcast to drum up publicity to hopefully get the movie made. So it's not even like they really care about this particular podcast thing. Mm-hmm. They're just doing it to be like, oh, we got all these really famous people to read the screenplay, and hopefully that'll get people to give us money to make the movie. That's even worse.
But the thing is, why would anyone want to watch a Vincent Chin movie?
I think that's fine. Yeah.
I just don't. I mean, the way they're doing it is what's incredibly awful. Like, you don't. Yeah, I mean, because it goes to your point, Chris, about how like they're just mining the tragedy of a person, and it wouldn't need to be even a tragedy of this sort of racial importance. But like, could be the murder of anyone, and then to sort of just use it as and not talk to anyone involved, like the family, friends. It's just incredibly disrespectful. And
because like, I can totally support trying to teach about Vincent Chin.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm guessing when they're trying to make a movie out of it, it's going to be kind of like very. But it's not going to be some wildly artistic interpretation of the...
Or somehow academic and, or not academic, but like really investigating sort of what can we learn from it and like new angles of like analysis. It's just sort of like a backdrop for drama.
It just reveals this like Hollywood mindset that things aren't real until we make a movie about it. Things don't matter until we make a movie out of it, which I guess is kind of true, but it's like... I think they have cause and effect backwards here again. Like the reason why people make movies is because it is often something that people just feel very... It's something that's so like steeped in culture that it just has to express itself out. But I think these people are trying to reverse engineer that, saying, oh, you know what? Not enough people care about Vincent Chin. If we make a great movie out of it, cast a hot dude as Vincent Chin, and maybe even like embellish his story, maybe people will care. And I guess it could, you know, that's kind of what Braveheart did for William Wallace. He was a total nobody. Now, like Scotland, maybe that's what they're trying to go for. But it's also weird, storybookification of history, which some people might argue is all what history is. But it just seems odd that, like, I don't know if people want to watch. Like, a lot of Black people complain that too much of Black, contemporary Black culture is all just trauma porn.
Yeah.
Just mining that. I wonder if Asian Americans are headed down the same place because we're just like... Yeah,
I mean, our current trajectory for sure is right. Like so much, a lot. I mean, we've talked about this before. How like, you know, our grievances aren't taken seriously until we prove just how badly we've been
wronged.
Right?
Yeah.
How badly we've been wronged. Yeah. And there's like it become like there's a higher and higher bar, you know, that has to be met, and so we. We go, no, you don't understand. This happens and this happens. And right. So, yeah, for sure, we're headed in that direction.
Millie, you're the filmmaker here. Like, what's your thoughts?
Well, I still can't get over the whole, you know, not bringing his estate into it.
Yeah.
That's a major turnoff for me. And I don't even know if I am going to want to watch either of these projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are not obligated. I know, like, initially when Crazy Rich Asians came out, you know, and there were a few different, it was Crazy Rich Asians and Searching you know, and there was this big push for Asians to support these Asian projects.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm over it.
Yeah.
You know, we are not obligated to support projects that are, you know, disrespectful of the family.
Right.
And are just sensationalizing the whole thing.
CRA did really well, right?
Yeah.
I still stand by that.
Great. So we made our point. There's money to be made in the market. Now make stuff that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, like, you know, that represents us correctly. Yeah.
I mean, our last Escape from Planet episode was all about opportunism and Stop Asian Hate. This smells a lot like opportunism, mm-hmm. being like, hey, this is the closest we have to like a slavery / Jim Crow story. So let's mine it for all it's worth.
I don't know
worth.
About that, but yeah, it's definitely like a significant event in when it comes to, you know, racism directed at Asians.
Or like our Emmett Till moment, kind of our equivalent
maybe
of that.
I find that sort of disrespectful to that stuff too. Like, I don't think we need to compare it to something else for it to be important. I'm not saying you are, Chris. I'm just saying, like, that instinct to necessarily say it's this of that.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful of our history, like Asian American history in America and of Black history in America. Like, we should be able to just realize that it's bad in and of itself.
Yeah, they're both terrible, terrible events. Yeah. Here's a question. Let's say this project and the other project, I don't know much about the second one, so I'm just going to talk about the podcast mainly.
Which I didn't, I didn't know that second one. Okay, anyway, yeah.
Let's say that they do, like, open a conversation, correspondence with Helen Zia and the estate. Would you guys feel differently about the project?
No, or I just think the project itself is weird.
It's too late for me.
Yeah, it's kind of too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be really pissed if they're not good.
Yeah.
You know, that's just adding insult to injury. So it almost makes me, like, afraid to watch them, you know,
or to listen. I just have a problem with the subject matter itself, because I think there's no way you're going to be allowed to take any risks. So it's going to have a very TV movie, by the book, hit all the, you know, adequate emotional moments kind of thing. So it's like, what's the point? You know, it's... let's just learn it in history books like we should. Yeah. We don't have to have a dramatization.
Well, we don't
have like hot people
even
playing all the leads. And it's this weird, I think, need to glamorize history to try to make it matter.
That's arguably like part of the reason, part of the motivation for it, right? Is that a lot of people don't learn it in history books.
Yeah, so let's encourage people to. Yeah. And I think that operates at a very personal level. Like, leave it up to the parents to teach it. We don't need Hollywood being our mommies and daddies, which I think is also another disturbing mindset a lot of these people have. They look up to Hollywood as our parents. Let's talk about Naomi Osaka then, as we're running out of time. Adam, you seem to be very passionate about this. Tell us what's going on.
So I don't know if, well, I guess for people's just education, Naomi Osaka is a woman's tennis player. I think she's Haitian and Japanese. She doesn't play for the United States. I think she represents Japan, I think.
In the Olympics.
In the Olympics she's going to. And I think she grew up in Japan. Anyway, so she's, she might have, non-tennis fans might know her from the fact that there was like a controversy, I think at the US Open in like 2018 or 2019. Where she ends up beating Serena Williams, but Serena Williams has a bit of an argument. There's an incident. And, you know, so that might have been sort of the introduction of her. But Naomi Osaka is probably the most famous women's tennis player other than Serena Williams. And she announced just before the French Open, which just started today, that she was going to do no press. It was affecting her mental health, and she's like, I'll pay the fines, and I'm not going to do any press. So that was already pissed some people off, because there's this weird parasocial relationship that I think some older fans, and I think the press definitely was pissed, because they feel entitled to her or and all the athletes sort of time and just energy. So that was pissing people off. And then today I saw that the four organizations for the four Grand Slams, and so the Grand Slams are the four most important tennis tournaments of the year. the French Open, the US Open, Wimbledon, and the Australian Open. And they put out a joint statement that said that if she continues to refuse to do press, that there will be more consequences other than the fines up to default. So they would force her to withdraw from the tournament.
Wow.
And that is such bullshit. I mean, they would not have a tournament without her. People don't watch the French Open because they love the French Open. Like most casual fans of tennis do not watch tennis because they love the sport of tennis. They like the players. And if that player is not in the tournament, they just won't watch.
Also, is this in their contract? Like what
so it's supposedly in the regulations of the tournament that you have to do these mandatory pressers. And I've always just been of the opinion that these things are just dumb. That you have dumb fuck journalists asking dumb fucking questions to athletes that have been putting, you know, been exerting themselves for the entertainment of the fans for the last, you know, 3 or 4 hours, and for their whole lives, they're just entertainment.
Yeah.
And you go and you're going to ask them like, so Naomi, how did it feel to lose? Well, how do you think it feels for them to lose?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want from them?
Yeah. All right, but so is your issue that she is getting fined or that she is being threatened to kicked out of the tournament?
Well, I think both. But what really sort of ticked me off is that they're threatening to make her withdraw from the tournament, basically kick her out of the tournament. And the crazy thing is that in their statement, they're like, this is an unfair advantage. Everyone else is doing their quote unquote duty. But for her to just refuse and I guess have the monetary independence to be able to pay the $15,000 fine every time is an unfair advantage, and that these press events are integral to the growth of the sport.
That's such bullshit.
Bullshit. And they would never do this if like a white, like if Azarenka or if like a Clint Clijsters was still playing
or
anything like that, they would never ever do this and say we're going to make her withdraw from the tournament. It's not only racist, but I just think it's sexist. They would never do that if like Novak Djokovic was like, I'm not going to do the pressers. They would fine him, but they would never be like, Novak, you've got to go to the pressers or we'll kick you out of the tournament. That would never fucking happen.
Well, we've definitely seen like Marshawn Lynch had the, you know, famous line where, you know, he would show up to a press conference.
Yeah, so I'm just doing this so I'd not get fined.
Yeah, so there is this thing where, yeah, the fine. I don't know if they would have said, Marshawn Lynch, you can't play in the Super Bowl if you don't come to the press conference. I don't think they would have gone that far, but I don't think it's weird that they would have threatened to fine her. I think that's standard.
They know that. She, in her statement on Instagram, she's like, I know I'm going to get fined. I'm okay with it. But mm-hmm. I can't do these press events because they affect my mental health and her game, right? Yeah. Her job is to play tennis, not to talk to dumb fucking reporters.
Right.
I do think though that especially a sport like tennis, which has like individual players, the growth of the sport does depend on stars being actual like personalities to the public. But yeah, often the questions are really dumb. And I think often they are used to probably provoke athletes into situations so that the writers will reporters
have
will
something to write about. Yeah, like that they justify their existence and that the fact that they can actually just be a tennis reporter.
Yeah.
Like it. And I agree, Chris, that yes, the growth of some sports are more important, depend more on individual athletes and their personalities. But we're not in the era, we're not in the 70s where there wasn't social media. No, Naomi Osaka is one of the most, you know, socially media savvy athletes. Like she's like a new generation, a new era of athlete, right? And she does more on her Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff to connect with the fans that actually matter, right? To grow the sport in the young audience, right? Than any TV interview that she does after her match that none of her fans are watching anyway. Like they don't watch it on cable. So I get what you're saying, but the media landscape has changed.
It's simple, dude. They're salty that they're not going to make as much money off of her. That's what it
absolutely.
Is. It's entirely selfish.
Wait, how would they make
like if they don't have an interview, they don't have a story. If they don't have a story,
the journalist. It's not like the Tennis Association. I don't think
the Tennis Association. There's probably some kind of benefits, the tennis association gets something like that.
They get money.
They probably get a cut. They probably get money. It's probably all reciprocal in a way.
Either way,
but
at the end of the day, what they care about is their franchise. They care about how many eyeballs, this and that. It's totally selfish.
This is probably about protecting the relevance and just like the very relevance of sports journalists. If you're not there for the press conference, then what the hell are you there for? Yeah. Like anyone can say, oh yeah, she won, you know, three matches to zero. It lasted 40 minutes. You know,
what they could do is they could watch the match and talk about what they saw with the match of their own opinion and be like, you know, that like this particular set was really crucial in the match, you know, this and that.
Right, but with a lot of these sports journalists, they always love to get into psychology, often making stuff up about athletes, creating drama, because people don't really care about they care a lot more about is Serena Williams didn't play well, is she and her husband have
I would pose the question then, are those people fans of tennis? If this is about growing the sport of tennis, what's more important, having a journalist that can watch a game, analyze it, and then have some interesting commentary on it, or talk about the personalities in the sport? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think the sad fact is probably kind of intertwined, and I'm not saying that that's good, and I think if we can stamp out that. I mean, that's basically what the Kwame Brown blow up was a lot about, because he was just sick of, you know, himself just being used as in this kind of gossipy sports media culture that really, it's one thing to say a player is not good, but to then basically use that to, you know, impugn his character and even in their families and stuff. It is just like high school gossip. That's what a lot of it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, it's just protecting the relevance, or it's just staving off the irrelevance of old school media when this, you know, and their existence. Like if they were really truly savvy and they wanted to be sports journalists, they could get on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook Live and spout the same things. And, you know, if they want to have access to these athletes, then talk to the athletes' representatives, make it like worth their time and make it, you know, to talk to you. But they just they feel entitled to it. And it just really rubs me the wrong way. And, you know, I don't think that the answer is we should force every athlete to do these. I think it should be the opposite. They should not have to do them. And if they're going to argue that it's about fairness now and every other athlete has to do it, my answer is not, well, make Naomi do it. No one has to do it. That's my answer. And if they really want to talk to the press, because some do like it, right? Some do like to go up there and talk to the press, and like they need to make a name for themselves, so that they're like, I'm going to get in front of these people and talk about my game and show my personality. Fine. Let them do it. But don't force the people to do it if they don't want to do it. It just, it doesn't make any, you know, I would have been upset enough if she was just going to be fine. Like, she was aware that she was going to get flack, she was going to get fined, and that's okay. And it's not okay, but like, she's aware of that. Mm-hmm. But for them to be like, look, we're not going to let you play tennis. That's the line for me.
Well, I think that's obviously a bluff. If she's not
I want her to call their bluff.
Their tournament.
Yeah. I want her to.
I would love her to do that. She would tell them to fuck off and say, forget it, I'm not playing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. She should be like, fuck you, I'm making my own tournament.
She needs them, you know?
Absolutely. She could, you know, just make your own tournament then. Like,
there are other tournaments. I mean, why does she have to play this year in the French Open?
She doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, who else is in women's tennis? Like four women from like Bulgaria and Serbia, like nobody really knows who they are. Yeah, she is the show, especially with like Serena Williams.
She is the future of women's tennis.
Off the sunset, so she's got leverage here. I would. It would be very entertaining if she called them on what is clearly a bluff. They're not gonna like.
Oh my god, I would love it so much for her to be like, kick me out.
Yeah, like that would be badass.
I would love it. It'd be so badass. Are you kidding me?
All right. Okay. I have to head out soon. So any last comments on thoughts or
one
on
comment?
You talk? Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of bluffs or calling bluffs, I'm so happy that the whole like Super League or whatever collapsed. I'm so pleased.
For soccer, right?
John, that was like 2 months ago. Where are you
going? I'm just saying. I'm just commenting. Like, you know?
Oh, yeah. I remember you guys talking
about
this.
It's a good trend. It's a good trend.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, fucking Chelsea won the Champions League. I don't want to talk about soccer. Thanks a lot, John.
Chris is sad now, John.
What have you done?
I guess City's like that team's so corrupt anyway. And I guess I'm just glad that Pulisic didn't score. That would have been so insufferable. Nothing against the guy. I think he's a great player, but just the American sports sphere would have just been so insufferable. So I guess it's the best case scenario in that. Relatively speaking, the little guy won, and Pulisic didn't score. So, nor did he start. So, rumors Poch is coming back to Spurs, but you know what? Enough soccer. As I said, I don't want to talk about it. It was great, a pleasure potting with you guys. Yeah. Adam, Millie, next weekend we're gonna live it up upstate.
That's right.
John, that's right.
That's what you get for living in Berkeley.
Yeah, have fun.
Maybe you'll get to join us.
We'll miss you, John.
Yeah.
All right. Listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back later this week with a bonus episode. Until then, good night, good day, whatever.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.